Wow. I had an email a couple of weeks ago. And there it was.
In my own back.
Would I do the speech, the thanks to the founder, the proposing the toast? I was terrified. I mean, at St. Michael's, women do not make speeches. It is a male place with a few exceptions that were allowed in under sufferance. But, golly, 46 years ago, my husband, Dennis Paxman, and I arrived, and he was installed as the 8th Warden, and I was trotting along, as always, in his footsteps, doing whatever headmasters' wives have to do. And the list of that is very long, and I'm not going to tell you the lot of it. But one had a lot of very difficult times and a lot of very happy times. And I can't remember the lot of them, which you may be thankful for. So I'll tell you one or two things that I do remember very clearly. The first commem, which of course was like this, just into September. And believe me, if you're on that sort of job, you know, being the headmaster's wife, I don't know what the headmaster felt, I didn't ask. It is terrifying. The place is full of delightful people who are parents of the boys in the school's charge. And they all know you, but you don't know them. They don't wear labels. They come up to you and talk most kindly, and they were lovely people. And I was very happy by the end of the 2 days. And at the end of the Sunday evening, after evensong, the staff, the resident staff, used to have supper in the dining hall at the high table, no boys, the leftovers from the weekend. They were rather nice. And Mrs. Friend, bless her, used to make sure we had a really good meal. And I went in and sat down among the others, and I said, oh, I think I've been standing up on my hind legs for 2 days and talking. And Dennis Parry, whom a great many of you will remember with great affection, said, then sit down and shut up. And I thought, I've arrived. And after that, well, things went on, and I won't go on about those, but I wanted to tell you one or two of the small things I remember with much pleasure. Well, one thing was, of course, that mothers used to ring up. And in those days, all boys were called by their surnames at school. And a mother would ring up on the matron's telephone, and I might answer it. I was along that end of the long corridor. And an anxious voice would say, I'm Timothy's mummy. Is he all right? And I think, oh, my God, which Timothy? And in the end, you know, I devised a scheme on the first day of term. I had labels made with a pin on the back, and I used to stick them in those baize notice boards, and the boy, new boy's name was on it. And I didn't know which one boy was t'other, because we'd seen them all a few times, but, you know, the parents, and I didn't know then on that day when they arrived which was which. And so if it said, you know, a nice tall boy, nice child came along, and I said, now see if you can find your name on the notice board. And it probably said T. Wiggins, or G. Hollis, or various other names, I won't go on. And of course they would go and proudly get their thing, and they put it on their jersey, and everybody knew who they were from then on. So that was one bit of cunning that worked very nicely. However, there are other things that I want to share with you that you won't have heard, I expect. There were strange things that happened at times, and nobody knew that they were going on. For instance, stop laughing, you. I can't get them in the right order. The one I like best, however, on a Saturday afternoon in summer, there was a cricket match at home, and the two teams came up to have tea, a cricket tea, sitting down in the dining hall. And my husband was sitting in his study in the long corridor, probably the door a bit ajar, and there'd be a knocking at the door. And so he said, come in. And a most blameless, excellent boy who had never caused any trouble to anybody came in and said, Mr. Nichols sent me to see you, sir. And Dennis said, "Why? What's the matter?" And Compton, it was, said, "Well, sir, I filled my mouth with tea and I blew it at the boy from the other team." Dennis said, "Why did you do that?" And he said, "I thought it was time I had a bit of fun round here, sir." And of course, Dennis was only just able to stop from laughing and suggested kindly that it would be a good idea to go back to the dining hall, apologise to the boy and to Mr. Nichols. So that covered that one all right. Now, another one. Do you remember how all of you who slept in the big dorm, you went up the stairs and there was a sort of glass roof over the top of the stairs and then the big dorm one side and the bathroom the other side. And that, you always got dusty on top. And boys in the big dorm regarded it as a matter of honour at some point in their career to climb up on via somebody's bed, get on the top of that glass roof, and then go over and get down the other side into the corridor, into the bathroom. And one day I was showing some parents around. This was always my job. I had to show parents round, prospective parents, round the place to see what the domestic side was like. And I walked up the stairs saying the usual stuff one did. You know, this is the big dorm, there are so many boys, this is the bathroom, the matrons are in charge. And I glanced up above my head and neatly written with somebody's forefinger in the dust on the top of the glass roof in reversed writing was the word bugger. And so I said, and we come this way to the parents, we, this is the bathroom. You know, distracted them from looking up. And after all was over, I remarked on this fact to Dennis, and we went and had a look. And when the big dorm were all up in their dormitory, or as he called them up there, it doesn't matter, they all went up there, and Dennis said, "I would like to know who's done this, because it was very embarrassing for my wife if the parents she was showing round had seen it. I'd like to know at once, please, who did it?" "Me, sir." "It was our younger son." Well, there were very many more funny bits of our life. 12 years there. And there came a time when Dennis said he really felt it was time to hand on to other people the burden that he'd borne very happily, but very exhaustedly for 12 years. And that is when we decided that we must go elsewhere. And I had always loved, and he had too, the singing of the Festival Grace, not the one we just had this evening, but the proper, in all four parts, Festival Grace, the whole dining hall full of people singing away a most glorious piece of music. Well, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And I decided that I must get this recorded, which I think we got put on the CD that William produced for us. But that was the end, the beginning of the end of our last year there. And Dennis had said to me several times over the years that he didn't honestly think that the college could go on indefinitely. He didn't think it'd be all too very soon that, you know, things would come to an end, but he thought it would come because we had a very large catchment area with a lot of very good prep schools in it. And they were getting the pupils that we would once have got to the college. We no longer had public transport. The railway had gone. Who remembers? Who's been to the college by train? And the four parents, you know, had to cope with getting their children to school. We didn't, when we came, have a half-term holiday break. We only had the exeats. You, by the time you came, young guy, you were able to be taken away for a half-term break.
Oh, yes.
But the parents pointed out that to come twice in the school term and take their children out for two successive days of a weekend was jolly expensive. You know, they had to find somewhere to stay. And one felt for them. We were parents too. And so at that stage, he talked to the governors, and it was decided that we should have a proper break at half term. which for the boys and their parents, and I may say the staff, worked out very well. So by the time Andrew was there, which was, I think, the normal thing that happened. But of course, the founder's purpose in founding the college was by then fulfilled. The rescue of English, the great tradition of English church music, had, I think, been accomplished by then. And now, as you know, it is very much part of the English setup that cathedrals and colleges, in usually Oxford and Cambridge, are able to continue to sing the music that might, without the founder, have been allowed to die and be lost. And so when, sadly, it did have to stop at St. Michael's, the purpose was fulfilled. So would you like to stand with me and drink to the health of our founder?
The founder.
The founder.
Thank you very much, Annie. Thank you.